And welcome to the Fanboy Garage. I'm Chris Lasanti, joined by my co-host Aaron Varola.
Hey, what's going on, folks? It's been a week.
Yeah.
Since we've done this, so apologies for missing last week's episode, but things happen, life gets in the way, people get sick. But we're back.
Speaking of, on cue, if since we don't have it in our budget to have a cough button here at the Fanboy Garage, pardon me if you hear me coughing from time to time. I'm still recovering from whatever the hell it was that got me last week. So just bear with me.
Yeah. I mean, hey, I've been sick on many of these episodes. I'm coming down with something. I feel it. It's like in the back of my throat. But that's not why you guys came here.
No.
You guys came to hear us talk movies, talk pop culture, do what we do. It's episode 40. So thanks again for always tuning in. Chris, let's get started with the big thing that we got to do over the weekend.
Yeah, so we – and apparently we weren't alone.
No, a lot of people took advantage of
this. Yeah, they did. So we took advantage of the Fandango early screening of Shazam this past Saturday. And one of the original reasons was because I was not supposed to be here for the opening of Shazam, which I now will be because a trip I had booked got bumped up a week or pushed back a week, whatever. So so anyway, but we already got our tickets, so we went and saw it early. And Aaron was, as you guys know, if you've followed the podcast, Aaron was not at all excited for this film. And I was kind of excited for it. And, you know, I was a little concerned after I saw the second trailer that was so comedy based. I was like, well, I hope it's not going to be that much of a comedy, that there's going to be comedic moments, but that it would be ultimately it'll become a superhero film. So we did get to see it, and we can't get into spoilers or really a lot of detail, unfortunately, no. And we will once
the movie hasn't even officially dropped yet.
Right. Once the movie officially opens that episode, we will get into the details and everything. So it's going to be a little difficult, but we can give our overall thoughts. So, Aaron, since you were not...
Jeez, thanks.
at all excited for this. Why don't you begin?
Sure. So I will say this, as I've said on Twitter and on the show a couple of times. It is confirmed that these DC films are not for me anymore. I liked Shazam more than I liked Aquaman, but that's not really saying a lot. There were, without getting into spoilers, it was just some inconsistencies with character portrayal. I didn't really find a lot of the jokes to be funny. It does lean in on other movies. I'm not going to spoil anything here by saying this, but David F. Sandberg has said multiple times that he took a lot of inspiration from Big, and that's very blatant in out there in front of you. There were I don't really want to like go into it until we can start talking spoilers, because there's a whole lot of stuff I'd like to unpack and sort of reveal here, but I didn't. You know, this, what I'll say is these DC movies have skewed to the other side of the spectrum. This is, without a doubt, a very kid-friendly, a very family-friendly film. And it almost dumbs things down for the adults in the room. And that feels a bit like, you know, we're being patronized. Throughout the film, it is one of those films where you check your brain at the door and you just kind of go and you watch it. There were moments of, you know, some emotional scenes that I felt were grossly undercut by the comedy in it, and you just, I don't know, it just, it didn't take itself seriously at all. So and that's what it was going for. So, you know, that's, it's not a problem for the film. It's just a problem for the film for me. I just didn't appreciate it like that. So that's all I have to say about that.
For now.
For now.
Yeah. Yeah. So
it's kind of hard to tiptoe and dance around this without actually talking about stuff.
Yeah. I mean, for me, I too liked it more than Aquaman, which again was, you know, I hated Aquaman, so it's not saying much, but it's better than Aquaman. Mm-hmm. I thought it was okay. You know, I don't know that. I mean, I'm seeing some of the early reaction, and, you know, some people are very over the top about it. I wasn't over the top about it. I was hoping to like it more than I did. It does rely a lot more on comedy, which was my fear. You know, if you're one of those people who believes in, you know, emotional moments being undercut by jokes, then I can't imagine that you're going to appreciate this film, right, unless you're looking at it through rose-colored glasses. 'Cause there's a lot of that in here. Yeah, I mean, I'd had, again, like you, it's hard to get into the things I had issues with without giving away too much. But like you said, tone, inconsistency of the tone, inconsistency of the characters. I think one thing I can say that's not really spoilery is that my biggest issue, and one of the things that I struggled the most with, which kind of took me out of the movie a little bit, is just the fact that I didn't believe for one second that the character that Zachary Levi plays is at all, you know, the character that the young version of Billy Batson would turn into.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, it just doesn't match up. His yeah. Shazam is so radically different personality wise than the kid that he, you know, starts out as, that was hard for me to wrap my head around. And again, when we can get into more details, I'll explain it more. But that was my biggest issue with the movie, and it was one that I had a hard time recovering from.
Yeah, you know what? Totally. This is, I mean, we're gonna shoot from the hip here, man. Instead of talking directly about Shazam and that, because I agree with you. I think that one of the fundamental issues with that film is the lack of cohesion in those two characters, the Billy Batson and Shazam characters. So instead of spending time talking at length about what we can't talk about, let's talk about Big for a second.
Yes.
And let's talk about the portrayal of Tom Hanks's Josh mm-hmm. Baskin. I mean, we don't really get a lot of younger Josh Baskin.
Right.
But there is a lot to be said about the way Tom Hanks portrayed
yes.
a kid trapped inside of a man's body.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk a little bit about that,
yeah.
because I think that at least when folks at least listen to this, you should sort of understand where we're coming from when you see the movie, and maybe it's something you'll be able to pick. Maybe we're nitpicking it, but you know, there was an innocence that Tom Hanks had when being Josh Baskin, and there were moments where in the film in Big, you know, he has this fear. It's like the world around them fear, right, of the big kid. Like, he'd only been living in his house for his, you know, for his entire life, and he was taking care of his little sister, and he, you know, he relied on his mom, and automatically he's been thrust out of that world and into adulthood, and wow. He reacts to that change the way a kid would. You know, there's a scene where he covers his head under the blankets because he hears the shooting and things like that happening outside. He's scared. He's, you know, he's crying to himself. He's looking for someone to reach out to. And he, you know, demonstrates a lot of what you would see in sort of a, you know, I guess he was a 12-year-old kid, 10-year-old kid or whatever. So he does a really good job at sort of bringing that to life. And a lot of the things that he experiences throughout the movie is as if a kid were kind of going through those things. And so he's taking and he's learning from those things around him. Like, I laugh every time I see it when he gets like a check for like $140.
Yeah.
And he's like so excited because, you know, in the mind of a kid, like, that's a lot of money. And that kind of stuff, we don't really, you know, not to go back to Shazam, but I'm going back to Shazam. There really aren't those moments.
No. And I think, you know, the thing for me is, look, I get it. So it's a little different than Big in the sense that, you know, in Big, he's not turning into a godlike superhero.
Right.
Okay. So there is that element. And sure, you know, you're thrust into the body of a godlike superhero. It's going to make you a little wacky, but there is not an innocence at all to Shazam. There's not an element of childlike innocence. There's an arrogance, actually, to him.
Doesn't actually translate back to the,
no,
the Billy Batson
character.
No,
it doesn't. And, you know, there's one moment in the film in particular that I thought had true emotional weight to it, and I thought was one of the better things in the movie. And I feel like it wound up being sort of like a lost opportunity, and it wasn't capitalized on because they were too busy starting to go back to the jokes. Like, and for me, like, I just felt like it needed to be more of a superhero film, and knowing what the going back to, ironically, Captain Marvel, right? One of my issues with Captain Marvel was the fact that I feel like they did the character a disservice because I thought that the character potentially could have been so much more and may eventually be that. But in that movie in particular, I thought the character could have been so much more. And in this, I felt the same way. I felt like this character could have been so much more, but they never fully committed to, you know, making this a true superhero film. This is a comedy. And it's a comedy that I don't think has a full grasp of exactly what it wants to be. And and part of that is the inconsistencies in the character. Like, you know, like you said, in Big, Tom Hanks is very much playing what you would think a child who becomes an adult all of a sudden overnight would act like. Minus the superpowers, of course. But in this, like I said, I just feel like the Shazam character is such a contrast to the Billy Batson character that it just took me out of it. And it didn't make a lot of sense. And it was the least effective part of the movie for me, which is the core of the movie, of course.
Right.
I just felt that there was a couple of minor adjustments that could have been made to that. And I think it would have been more effective for me. And there's just a lot of things that happened abruptly to me. I think that a lot of things happen very quickly. A lot of the emotional weight of certain things gets lost because it's secondary. Excuse me. And I mean, again, when we can get into more details, a lot of this will make more sense. And we can, unfortunately, we kind of have to dance around certain things. But just in general, I thought it was okay. I thought there, like you said, there was some pretty funny moments, you know, despite the overdone comedy. Some of the stuff really hit. And then, like, as opposed to Aquaman, where I didn't find any of the stuff funny, I didn't think any of it hit. In this movie, there's a few things that hit and hit pretty well.
I mean, Zachary Levi, for better or worse, is just a slapstick comedian in this film, and he, I mean, honestly, he does a great job at it. You know, one of our previous episodes, way back in the beginning, was this idea as if the character of Shazam was miscast.
Yes, that's true.
Do you remember that?
Yep. And I actually believe, and I didn't believe it at the time because I was all in. I believed in the marketing. I thought he was doing a great job with the marketing. Now having seen the movie, I think he might have been. I didn't enjoy him in this. And it's funny because if you took Captain Marvel and you took Shazam, based on the trailers and my initial impressions before I walked into the theater, I would have expected to not like Brie Larson as Captain Marvel and to like Zachary Levi as Shazam. And I kind of had the opposite reaction. I liked Brie Larson more than I thought I would in Captain Marvel, and even though I'm generally a fan of hers. And I didn't like Zachary Levi as much as I thought I would in this movie, having seen the whole thing now. And I just think that this character, this was, for me, again, personal taste, for me, this was the wrong, this wasn't the right direction for the character as they went. There were elements of the character that they could have done, like the comedy and stuff, but I would have preferred this character to eventually evolve more during the course of the movie. And that doesn't happen.
Yeah,
and it doesn't seem like it's going to happen either.
No. And the thing is, too, he hits a point in the story where you expect to see the arc kind of peak.
Right.
And it just doesn't. Just doesn't happen.
And I've seen the people, and I did this too. I mean, the comparisons to Deadpool, you know, where everyone said, well, this will be DC's Deadpool.
No.
Well, yeah. So Deadpool.
That's like a hard no.
Deadpool is, first of all, the way Deadpool is portrayed on screen in his movies is the way he's portrayed in the comics. So it's not like they took a property and said, we're just going to do something completely different with it just to be different. Deadpool is true to Deadpool, which is what made those movies fun and great. That's first one in particular. Well, this is not, I mean, Shazam in this movie, they went in a different direction with the character just to be different. And just to be comedic. And it's not 100% befitting of the character. You know, having a childlike innocence and being a goofy, kind of wisecracking buffoon are two completely different things. And I think that was something that was missed here. So that's why I don't love the Deadpool comparison anymore. I mean, I liked it, and it just, I was using the comparison in the beginning just as a concept for how I thought this movie was supposed to exist outside of what was at the time the DCEU. Not so much the tone and the feel, but how it would be kind of its own thing separate and apart. And that's actually not even the case. I mean, this, you know, the movie is clearly rooted in, I mean, there's a Superman and a Batman and an Aquaman that exist in this world. Who they are, we don't really know, but they exist clearly in this world, and we, you know, we could kind of get an idea of who they are and who they're supposed to be. But this thing is very much set in this DCEU that, you know, that Justice League existed in.
Yeah, very, very much so.
Yeah.
And that's something we'll have to talk about.
Yes.
In the next episode.
Yeah, I mean, people have seen stuff in the trailers and in the promo pictures and stuff like that.
Yeah, but, I mean, it becomes more concrete in the credits, actually.
Yeah. So so anyway, I mean, unfortunately, we can't, you know, we will eventually be able to get into the details. You know, maybe we'll have some people on that actually liked the movie for, you know, when we do the episode. Yeah, when we do the episode where we get into detail on the movie, once you know everyone's seen it, we'll have at least a guest on that really loved the movie, so we can have that balance and we can kind of you know, because it's unusual. Like you and I started out doing this thing, we're on different paths with a lot of movies, and now lately we've kind of been on the same path, just different from a lot of other people. So we'll bring somebody on or some buddies on that actually really liked the movie, so we can have that point counterpoint when we get into the more detailed analysis. So, you know, any of the listeners out there, and I know there's a couple of you that have already expressed how much you enjoyed the movie, you know, keep that in mind. Let us know if maybe you'd be interested in coming on to discuss Shazam in detail.
Yeah. And for those of you other folks that are listening and who may not feel comfortable in joining the conversation, certainly shoot us your reactions if you've seen it via Twitter, DM us.
Yeah.
We're more than happy to kind of talk about it more. But if there's other things you want us to kind of dive into for next week's episode, please let us know.
Yeah. And I'm not sure whether I'll have seen the movie twice by the time. I tend to not see movies twice by the time we talk about them. It's
not,
possible.
I'm not seeing it again.
I know you're not, but I might.
More money. Are you really going to pay more money?
Well,
to go see
it's
it
possible
again?
That I might see it again by the time we talk about it. If there's a Revengers watch party that I'm able to go to. I don't know that I will voluntarily on my own go back and
look,
see it again.
I love all of our listeners. I love our fellow Revengers, but you're not. You're going to have to pay me to see that movie again.
There you go.
All right, then.
So anyway.
I'll leave it right there.
Yeah, so that's that. So, you know, while we're on the subject of the DCEU, or the DCU, whatever the heck this is now, and talking about shifts in tone and how this DC thing has shifted completely. And that's one of the things that I find amazing. And one of the things we talked about as we were walking out of the theater was how, I mean, talk about a 180. This thing started out a dark, brooding deconstruction of superheroes. And now we've gone in the complete opposite direction.
Yeah.
You know, where this is all like fun, joyous, goofy. And I almost feel like, you know, we have to be careful not to have been, because people were so down on the dark, brooding concept that, like, now just because there's some laughs and colors that all of a sudden it's like, oh, this is what I wanted. Well, not necessarily.
I mean,
one extreme to the other isn't.
Money talks, though.
Well, no, it certainly does. And it's clearly a better direction from a general audience perspective. And I'm not talking about that. I'm talking creatively, though. You want to be careful that you're not assuming that just because you didn't like this, you want the opposite extreme. Like, there's probably a middle ground somewhere. But speaking of, the architect of that dark, brooding deconstruction of superheroes, Zack Snyder, he did a thing, right?
He was like SnyderCon.
SnyderCon, and he spoke about some of his ideas for what his Justice League was originally supposed to be. So why don't you kind of go over some of that stuff?
God, I don't even know where to start. So obviously we've talked a little bit about this at length, and, you know, rumored, actually, I think he pretty much confirmed this, but he was looking at a five film arc. And initially he had already written the script for Justice League before BVS. So a lot of what we were seeing in BVS was meant obviously to lead into Justice League. Some of the things that he had planned, I said this on Twitter as well, was that I'm kind of glad we didn't see it. And I understand, like, people have responded to me and said, hey, like, that's like really ridiculous of you to say that, because he would have had more time to kind of get through his overall plot and story. But it seemed really, really complicated. So he had this whole idea of time travel, which he was creating, and I can't even really get into it in detail, but it had to do with something like Flash could only bring somebody in through time at the exact moment in which the Earth was in its perfect rotation, and it was had to be in the same position, or some crazy stuff like that. And that took him like 5 minutes to explain. But it was also like the fact that, you know, Superman does eventually go dark, and it has to do with the death of Lois, and that Batman has a lot to do with that because he tries to protect her or something like that. But it was just a really, really complicated plot that very much deconstructed every character in ways that you probably would have not even been familiar with the end result if you were a comic book person. It was just so different. He talked about that. He talked about, you know, he kind of addressed some of the commentary that has been happening around BVS, specifically this idea that Batman doesn't kill, and he's like, but I can't say what he said, but pretty much like, wake the F up. Like, of course he does. So that's spurred a whole line and the line of debate from everybody, from like Rob Liefeld, the creator of Deadpool, to our good friends from BOF. It's just crazy. So yeah, I mean, it was interesting to hear from Mr. Snyder his take. Yeah. And whether or not a Snyder cut actually exists, and it sounds like definitely doesn't.
Right.
That there was a lot of the stuff that he wanted to create, he didn't even get a chance to really film. So, anyways.
Yeah, I mean, and this is why I'm not a fan of an over-reliance on this concept of a shared universe when you're starting out from the gates, right? So he keeps talking about how he had this 5-film story arc in mind, and that's how all of this was originally created. And you see, the problem is you never know what's going to happen, right? You don't know what's going to be a success and what isn't. You don't know what's going to work and what isn't. You don't know just what life is going to bring you, right? So the idea that he thought he was going to be able to pull off this 5-film arc without any interruptions and without any was ambitious, but probably not very realistic.
And it scared the hell out of the studio.
And
to be honest with you.
Well, and then when you start writing a Justice League movie before you're making what was essentially supposed to be the sequel to Man of Steel, which wound up getting completely blown out of proportion. That's a problem too, because now there are these things in BVS that were meant to lead to a movie that we never saw, and they just have no context to them now. You know, they're just these random things that occur that we never saw an end game to. And that's my problem with it. Like, that's why I would prefer you just make these movies as standalone movies that have some connective tissue, rather than make these elaborate where this is one big story, because we don't know where the story is going to go. We don't know what we're going to get to see. And so now you kind of create this mess where, you know, these movies and these characters should have been able to stand on their own, and now they don't. And, you know, now, I mean, going forward, they will. But that was, to me, the biggest flaw of the whole thing. Now, the interesting thing to me, though, and I've said this over and over again, I don't buy the 5-story arc thing.
Oh, you don't think that it
no,
was actually like a
because,
done deal?
I mean, how quickly do we forget BVS was not a thing?
That was supposed to
be Man of Steel 2. And then it wasn't until then the studio got, and all of a sudden it became Batman v Superman. Then it became Batman Dawn of Justice, because even Wonder Woman, those characters weren't even supposed to be. Like, it just kept growing and growing and growing. So when exactly was this 5-story arc originally planned? Like, he claims that he was writing Justice League before BVS. Well, BVS wasn't even BVS until kind of the last minute before the thing went into production. So, like, he's the guy, so I'm going to have to take him at his word, but I've never fully believed that that whole 5-story thing was a real deal. At least not the way he portrays it to be. I mean, we know that at one point Justice League was supposed to be Justice League Part 1 and Justice League Part 2. So I do believe that at one point there was a concept that would have led to a 5-story arc being like that, you would be able to be put together. But I wonder when exactly the idea for that, like, I can't believe that during Man of Steel, you know, especially when Christopher Nolan was still heavily involved, that there was already an idea for like a 5-story arc.
Yeah. I mean, maybe it was like in bits and pieces. Cause if you remember, Suicide Squad was also supposed to be radically different, and the big bad in that film was supposed to be Steppenwolf.
Right.
So maybe in theory it was like Man of Steel, BVS, Suicide Squad, Justice League 1, Justice League 2. That's technically 5 films.
Right.
But that's a stretch.
But then why would you?
Because it's not entirely a Zack Snyder thing. Right. Obviously, because David Ayer.
And then you're also, you had Wonder Woman in there, which retconned stuff from BVS. So that clearly wasn't a plan. And she was in, you know, that's why I say, like, you know, like how much of this was as thought out as they thought it was. Because
I mean, maybe in his mind.
It's possible. Sure.
You yeah. know, he had some rough outlines.
Yeah.
For how he was going to do all of this, but I don't necessarily think it was sold into the studio as a 5-picture thing.
Right. And it doesn't seem like it. But like I said, we never got to see it anyway. And so now we have this awkward collection of movies, like, well, and more so BVS than anything else. BVS, I think, is the one movie that doesn't really stand on its own now because of those random moments that we're never going to get a resolution to.
Right. You mean like the Flash appearing?
The Flash, yeah. And the fact that Wonder Woman doesn't make sense,
right,
when you watch BVS, things like that. You know, you could still watch Man of Steel and that, you know, holds up on its own. You could, obviously, Wonder Woman does. And Justice League, for what it's worth, because of what the finished product wound up being, that, you know, that kind of stands alone, too.
Right.
You know, other than missing the part of why Superman's not there, you know, you'd have to go back.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, it's weird. You know, I don't know if... I'm assuming we'll eventually put this Zack Snyder stuff to bed, you know, as these DC movies keep coming out and are successful, you know, and I'm going to assume Shazam is going to be a success as well. But yeah, I mean, it's become a fascinating footnote in history. You know, and I've always been fascinated by these types of stories, and, you know, I don't think we're ever going to get like a documentary or anything like we got for like, say, Death of Superman Lives and something like that. But I've always loved those kinds of stories of like the movies that never were. So I kind of like stuff like that. But I just would like to eventually be able to put this thing to bed.
Yeah. Even the whole event that he was in, and I get with, you know, his other films and things like that, that he was showing off and talking about, because it's really cool to have a director, you know, in a room full of fans that are, you know, asking questions and kind of having that dialogue after they've seen, you know, their respective work. With the stuff with BBS and Justice League, he went so, I don't know, extra with a lot of his comments. That I think even some of the like devout Snyderites or whatever they call them, Zaddies or whatever name they want to give themselves, have kind of taken a step back as well and going, ooh, actually, no, that doesn't really sound like it makes any sense whatsoever. Like Batman killing people and all that crazy stuff. And I don't know. I just it was like Zack Snyder unhinged. Honestly, I was just reading his like full comment on this like Batman thing killing, and I'm like, yeah, dude, you are dark.
Well, he might be, and he's also probably a little tired of, and I would be too if I was him, a little tired of like hearing about Superman's neck snap and Batman killing and all this. Like, these were creative decisions that he made as a director. Sure. And they were risky. You know, we do complain a lot about paint by numbers and people not taking chances and risks. And he certainly did. And he took risks with iconic characters, which is ballsy. So you give him credit for that. And he's heard nothing. I mean, he literally has had the entire trajectory of whatever his plans were, in theory, shifted by the reaction to the neck snap and things like that. You know, like, and all of his decisions, you know, these risky moves that he chose to take have kind of led to him no longer being a part of that franchise and having it taken away from him. So I would imagine he's going to be a little testy,
a little sour
and salty when people keep mentioning it. I probably would be too, but you know, I don't agree with the decisions. But I mean, I give him credit for, as least for a filmmaker, for trying them. It's not what I would have done. And I don't think that these were the right characters to do it with. But but whatever. I mean, he took the chance. And yeah, I mean, he's still hearing about it. But part of that is his own fault, too, right? Because he doesn't want to seem to give it up either. And
right, exactly.
You know, so I mean, he's bringing some of this on himself as well. you know, rather than just moving on and doing things. But, you know, look, it's his process. And, you know, he's dealt with stuff in his personal life that go beyond, you know, filmmaking and things like that, too. So I'm sure, you know, things like that are a distraction for him. And it's kept his name out there. So, you know, the Zack Snyder brand right now is in an interesting place. And it'll be interesting to see how much of this carries over now. You know, has he improved his stock in some ways as a filmmaker, or has he not? It'll be interesting to see like where he's at right now, because he clearly has this fan following I didn't know was a thing that apparently was and has grown. And we'll see how that carries over now, you know, into his future works. I mean, it's going to be a while before we know, because he's not doing anything for the big screen anytime soon. But it's going to be interesting to see, how this translates now and what his brand is like now as an actual filmmaker.
Right. Yep, agreed. So something we didn't get a chance to talk about, since we're sort of talking about the brands of filmmakers, but so what, 2 weeks ago maybe? James Gunn comes back, gets signed back up to be the director of Guardians of the Galaxy 3.
Yep.
Ooh. I mean, that was pretty, that was a pretty interesting and I don't want to say ballsy move. I think it was the right move for Disney. I think the knee-jerk reaction to remove him from the director's seat, we did, and of course we talked about this at length as well in previous episodes, but so he's back, and it's kind of interesting to see people's reactions to that. I know there's quite a few excited people. There are some people who are not so excited about that. And then there are people who are scared, actually, for it, because they were really looking forward to the Suicide Squad 2, which he still, at least last I heard, had every intention of still directing. But I think people are a little worried about that.
Well, from what I read, he's still doing it, and Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 has been pushed back until after the Suicide Squad movie happens. So it seems like he's still going to do both. I don't see why he wouldn't. You know, it's interesting. At the time, I thought that it was the right decision to remove him based on what I had read. But this thing hasn't really had the legs that most outrage does, of this type anyway. And since he already was established and people were excited about him doing Suicide Squad for DC, it's clear that the fan base and the people were not as up in arms over this.
Right.
So I think time healed these wounds. And Disney said, you know what, we have this property. What is the point? Let's just finish it out with the guy who created it and who put it on the map and took this obscure property and made it an A-list thing for us. You know, why not? It's not like they're going to continue to make, I'm assuming they're not going to make Guardians of the Galaxy movies forever. So just let him, you know, let him come back, finish what he started, and, you know, and then they can go their separate ways after that. He's clearly not going to have the influence on this next phase of the Marvel films as he probably originally was supposed to have. You know, I think he was supposed to be a big part of. Well, maybe he will, but I don't see how he could, especially if he's making, you know, Suicide Squad. But
I mean,
maybe he is. I don't know. Maybe if they really are going to focus more on the cosmic elements. Yeah. Going forward, I mean, you know, he's a guy who kind of mastered that element here with Guardians of the Galaxy, so maybe they will have to rely on him, and maybe that was a factor in this decision.
Yeah.
Like, wait a minute, the guy who was sort of the architect and whose, you know, blueprint we've been using for the cosmic-y elements of this, you know, because even in Thor Ragnarok, there was a lot of his influence in that movie.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're going to, you know, maybe we need to have him here if that's the direction that we're going to be going. Well, but yeah, I mean, it's. I was like I said, I was in favor of him being removed at the time, but you know, maybe it's hypocritical of me or whatever. But I'm not up in arms over the fact that he's back. I honestly have sort of just kind of made peace with all of that stuff by now.
Yeah.
And
I mean,
the fact
there are
some
directors who have done worse or who have allegedly done worse.
Well, there's always somebody who's done worse, but yeah.
And their films have gone, you know, were nominated
right.
for
not,
Academy
not
Awards.
Not necessarily for Disney, but yeah. I get it.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's interesting timing. You know, the Fox Disney deal just closed last week.
Right.
So lots of, you know, lots of interesting things that are going to likely unfold in the next phase of the MCU. And again, I think, you know, Feige had originally said this is before the whole scandal with Gunn, but, you know, he was on deck to be the architect of the whole cosmic realm. And it makes me wonder if they're like, yep, now that we've got this sort of locked in, you know, does he become a Favreau, you know, behind the scenes, kind of still contributing, but not as sort of out in the open as he'd once been. So really interested to see that. I was also laughing at some people because, you know, a lot of people were up in arms. I want to say up in arms. Up in arms is the wrong word, our term. They were, oh, you know, James Gunn is going to be bringing some of his original sort of, you know, filmmaking eye to Suicide Squad. Look at films like Slither and all that stuff, you know, having this commentary about how, like, he had been pigeonholed in or alluding that he had been pigeonholed into the creation of the Guardians of the Galaxy films, and that he would finally be, you know, unleashed for DC because they're such a creator-driven studio. And it's like, pump the brakes. You know, this dude took a, like, to your point, Chris, he took a really obscure comic book property and made it into a multi-billion-dollar blockbuster franchise within a franchise. And a lot of his sensibilities, a lot of his directorial, you know, skills and eye is all over those films. So, you know, I would say we're probably going to get two maybe very different aesthetics, you know, from James Gunn, given his, you know, his experience with Guardians of the Galaxy and what he'll likely bring to Suicide Squad too. But,
well,
come on.
And then also, it's not fair in the sense that, I mean, as a director, his body of work is not that big, right?
No.
So, I mean, unless you're going to go back to the trauma stuff and, you know, Slither is a horror film, kind of, you know, right. Essentially. So it's a very different feel. I don't know that you're going to sit there and say, well, that's the real James Gunn. Well, how do we know? He's made more Guardians of the Galaxy films than he's made movies like Slither. So, right. You know, what is the real James? We don't know. The guy, if you look at his body of work, go through his filmography, I mean, he wrote Scooby-Doo. Like, you know, right. I mean, it's not like this guy was this, like, avant-garde, you know, avant-garde auteur all his life, and then all of a sudden he made Guardians of the Galaxy. Like, no. Like, right. This guy's, you know, he did stuff for Troma, which we know what they're all about, you know, and then he wrote Scooby-Doo, and then he directed Slither. And then he directed a couple other movies that didn't do anything. And then he directed Guardians of the Galaxy. So, like, I don't know what that means. Well, James Gunn unleashed. Well, he's not making a horror film about, you know, slugs that, you know, take over the town. So I don't know what that means. I think Guardians of the Galaxy is very much James Gunn because it didn't feel like anything that was in the MCU at the time. You know, now people associate Marvel with a lot of stuff that feels like that, but in a pre-Guardians of the Galaxy MCU, there was nothing else like it. So I think that was very much James Gunn. And, you know, I don't know what anybody's expecting, you know, out of his Suicide Squad, that, you know, the idea that he's been held back by Disney, I don't know what that means. Held back from what?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's just, you know, it goes back to their approach to making films, I guess.
Right?
Because it's producer, allegedly producer-driven.
Well, but content. I mean, Guardians of the Galaxy to me is the perfect example of a movie that, like I just said, basically, I mean, I just alluded to it without saying it, but I'll say it. Guardians of the Galaxy did not feel like anything else in the MCU at the time. No, that was clearly a director-driven property. You know, yeah, Kevin Feige, you know, has his hands in all of this, but, you know, Guardians of the Galaxy didn't look, didn't sound, didn't feel like anything that had come before it in the MCU, and stuff after it has. So I think James Gunn had a chance to, you know, put more influence into the MCU than most directors have. And he's made some of the more original movies in the MCU. And so clearly, you know, it's he is a bad example for if you're going to pick out any, you know, if you're going to use somebody who you're going to say they fell in line with the Marvel machine, that is probably the worst example you could use. The best example would probably be the two people that directed Captain Marvel, whose names I still don't remember. You know, that would be a good example of like, well, they're just part of the machine. But James Gunn is a poor example of that.
I agree.
Yeah.
I agree. Breach.
So speaking of MCU, we didn't get a chance to react to the Avengers trailer. That dropped that I almost before I got sick, I almost jumped off the train in excitement when I saw this thing going into work in the morning. And I was could not wait to talk about it, and then we didn't get to. But this trailer, oh my God. So this Avengers Endgame trailer that just came out, that is like how to make a trailer 101.
Right.
I mean, that damn thing was awesome. And that got me more excited to see a movie than anything has in a very long time. Like, I was ready to get in line, like, that minute to get to see this thing. I cannot be more excited for this movie. I hope I'm not setting myself up for failure, but I couldn't be more excited for this movie. I want this thing to happen now, and I can't wait to see where it goes. I can't wait to see these characters again. I can't wait to hear that music again. I just, man, that trailer hit all the right notes for me. It's dramatic. It gives you a feel for, you know, what the movie's going to be without really showing you much, which is not easy to do.
No, in fact, most of it was like previous footage.
Yeah.
From like the other MCU films.
Yeah.
It's like the Russos are meticulously picking out images to show us, to get us kind of, you know, obviously they've got to release something, but to get us, you know, all types of excited for the film. And damn, man, they're doing a great job. Because like you, I like flipped out over it, and you know, there's some sadness to it because I realize this is probably the last time we're going to see some of our favorite characters.
Hopefully. I hope they go that route. I said that before Infinity War 2, and they, I mean, I get it. Yeah. It's really part one of a two-part story, but I hope they go that route. I'm looking, I'm actually will be disappointed if they kind of cop out on that.
And they keep people in the contract.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, so it just, you know, whatever it takes, I'm going to go see that movie, whatever it takes. I mean, that was just
seeing them in those red and white uniforms, whatever those are, for lack of a better term, like walking to get, like, man, I wanted to jump in there and be with them.
Yeah.
Like I was ready. That's I couldn't pretty, do anything, but dope. I was ready. I was ready to go there and walk with those guys and be a scrub that does nothing. But yeah, I wanted that.
You know, just you're in your red and white or white and red Avengers costume while you mop the floor.
Yeah, I'm all in. Let me mop.
Hey, I just picked up a bunch of dog poop. Here I am.
Sweet.
I can't wait for it either. And hopefully we'll have another Revengers watch party. Hopefully. And we'll all be there kind of checking that thing out. Because I definitely feel like this is going to be a movie we're not going to want to miss. To be involved in like the first day it gets released. I'm not waiting for a Saturday.
Yeah, no. No, that's, yeah, no, you can't. Because I mean, this is like a, you know, for me, this is like one of Star Wars movies. Like, I have to see this thing right away. Like, I can't, I'm not going to be able to hold out and wait. And it's basically a month away from the day that we're recording this. So it's going to be here quick.
100%. Yeah.
It's going to be here real quick.
Gosh.
You know, what's throwing me off right now is I'm about to say, wow, it's only a couple of weeks away. And then I'm like, oh, because we're talking about Shazam. And I'm realizing, no, wait, we show Shazam early. It's not April 5th yet. So, but it's farther away than I thought originally, but it's going to be here very quickly.
Yeah.
A year ago, it didn't seem like it was ever going to come. And now here we are. So,
here we are. Yeah. And they just released a whole bunch of posters today on Tuesday. Yep. So it should be in the market. You know, hopefully you guys have already seen it by the time you listen to this episode. And they do some really cool, colorful photos against some of the black and white ones of folks that have were, you know, sort of victim to the snap. So some really good stuff there. The marketing is on point. And in fact, this movie is impacting some of the marketing for other films. So I read something that Spider-Man Far From Home will not have a trailer until after Infinity War, because the next cut of the trailer will reveal some things Infinity War, Endgame. Yeah. Will reveal some things about Endgame. So
was something we were wondering, right? Like, how's that going to work, really?
Yeah. when things actually take place.
And I guess it does answer the question of, well, yeah, they are clearly going to address Endgame in Far From Home.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to be one of those things that's just kind of explained away, obviously. So there will be a direct tie-in, which is good, because there should be.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm going to assume that it clearly, I mean, obviously we figured that it's a post-Endgame universe that movie's taking place in. So
Far From Home?
Yeah. So regardless,
I don't know about that.
I would think. I mean, you wouldn't address Endgame at all. If I mean, now whether Endgame reverses time, whatever, that's different. But clearly, Endgame has happened. If they're addressing it in Far From Home, Endgame has happened when Far From Home is going on.
I mean, so, Amy Pascal. And this is way back, but she did say the sequel to Spider-Man, which was not named yet, was to take place after the last Avengers movie.
Right.
But that was so long ago. I mean, this is like 2016, 2017 maybe? No, 2017.
Yeah, but still, the plan was in place, though. I mean, obviously. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that makes sense. So, yeah. Well, we'll see. I'm pumped for Far From Home as well, actually. I'm more pumped for that. I forget how pumped I am for that movie sometimes until I see a trailer for it, and then I realize I'm very excited for that movie.
Yes.
Yeah. Especially in a post-Endgame world where my brains will be less scrambled at that point, and we can just kind of go and enjoy the movie just for what it is without all of that other stuff to have to worry about. So Disney and Fox, their deal is closed.
It's done.
Done deal.
Talked about it probably two episodes ago.
Yeah.
Said March 20th was going to be the day, and, like clockwork, it was.
Yeah. And now we just have to wait for announcements, because now all the other stuff is done. And now it's just a matter of when they're going to start announcing the fallout. How this is going to affect things.
Yeah, I mean, it's unfortunate because obviously with most mergers, that means that some, you know, jobs are going to be consolidated. We don't really know how big of an impact that will be. I know a lot of people have commented about that. Oh, you know, everyone's so excited about the Fantastic Four and the X-Men and all these people are going to lose their jobs. Like, we get it. Business.
I mean, those are two separate things, too. I mean, I don't know why everything's got to be all or nothing now. Like, you can be, again, this is where, you know, we need to remember, like, we need to get back to having a little bit of nuance and a little bit of subtlety and realize that, like, you can say, oh, it sucks that a lot of people are going to lose their job. That's never a good thing. And still be excited that the Fantastic Four are going to be part of the MCU. I mean, those are two separate things, right? Like, I don't know when we lost the ability to separate things, but we did somewhere along the way. And now everything's all or nothing. But those are two separate issues. Like, yes, mergers happen. Unfortunately, people lose their jobs. That's never a good thing. You know, you don't want that. And you don't want to happen too much of it. But at the same time, as a fan, you could still be excited for the fact that this merger happened. There's nothing we can do to stop it. So now that it's a thing, you could still be excited for the fact that the Fantastic Four and the X-Men are going to be part of the MCU potentially. Like, those are separate issues, and we get it.
Right.
You know, one is a human issue where you don't want to see people lose their jobs, and the other is just, like, as a fan, you're like, cool. Like, this is, you know, something that I'm excited about.
I mean, yeah. I'm jobs aside, I'm stoked. I'm stoked beyond, obviously, I've said this many, many times. I am excited about Star Wars. I hope that happens. I'm excited about the Fantastic Four. I'm excited about X-Men. But what about X-Men am I most excited about? I want Rogue, man. I want a true-to-life Rogue portrayal. That's what I want. Because now that we've got Captain Marvel, we can make that connection. We can have a solid Rogue character. I want to see what they do if and when they recast Wolverine, who that is. I want to see Silver Surfer. I want to see Galactus. I want to see all that stuff, man. Like, there's just so much to work with. And then I want to see what happens in the industry itself. I want to see what happens to streaming. I'm so intrigued at the Disney Plus model. I'm intrigued by the Hulu, you know, Hulu now being majority owned by Disney, and the delineation of properties and studios and where they're going to be sort of organizing their libraries of content. I'm fascinated by that, especially off of the back of Apple's announcement yesterday on Monday about Apple TV Plus and the content that they're going to be creating and the aggregation of apps and all of that stuff that they want to do. So I'm interested. I'm like all in on the tech side of things. I'm so intrigued to see where all that goes.
Yeah. And that's ultimately for me too, where this thing gets really exciting, because there is so much content now that they have. And there's less red tape now that you have to cut through to get that out there. They could just put it there wherever they want and however they want. And hopefully that happens. And I see, I mean, obviously starting their own streaming service, they clearly see the value in it. So it's not like they're going to be shy in trying to hold stuff back. You know, Disney for years, like when I was a kid growing up, all those many moons ago, Disney was known as like the company studio that would hold stuff back, right? They would release their movies and then they'd pull them off. Then they would just release some limited run and then they would be, you know, they'd go into collectible status. And then like 10 years later, they'd release it again on home video, things like that. Like, they were known for that. Now, you know, they don't seem to be that company anymore. So hopefully they give everybody what they want. There's such an opportunity now to take all of this great content and just put it out there. Through all of the different means that they have now, and hopefully they take advantage of that. You know, I don't often think that these types of mergers are a win type of thing, because usually from a creative standpoint, like from a fan's perspective, sometimes you can become a loser because, you know, costs can go up, and having one company have so much control over things is never necessarily a good thing, but I feel like this is a win-win.
Yeah, no, 100%. And you know, it's funny, a lot of people have gotten caught up in the, you know, Disney-Fox thing, but behind the scenes, was it AT&T and Time Warner merged?
Well, I mean, we've seen a bunch of these, yeah. I mean,
it's happening. It's happening everywhere.
Escaping it. No, and there's a lot of money. There's been a lot of money spent, especially when you're publicly traded companies. And there's only, you know, the media landscape is changing so dramatically, and it's hard for people to keep up. And especially if you weren't a company that was on the forefront. So it makes sense for some of these mergers to happen, because you take one company that might be on the forefront of one element of media and merge it with another company that might have their finger on the pulse of another element of media, and separately they're not strong enough, but together now they become one big company that can cover all the bases. That's really the future. That's where you're at right now. That's where you need to be.
Yeah, I mean, you know, people need to also remember that there are other large companies that are starting to dabble, and they were not originally media companies or content companies, and that's what they're starting to do now.
Yeah.
Google, through YouTube. So, I mean, Cobra Kai, we love Cobra Kai here on the show, and, you know, that's a YouTube property. That's
and
a
again,
YouTube show. You've got Amazon.
Yeah. There was more. There was more to this Disney deal too than the X-Men. You know what I mean? Right. Like people, we focus on that element of it from because of what we talk about. But I mean, there were television networks involved in this, and sports programming involved in this. And I mean, Disney's already started to sell off some of the regional Fox sports networks that they got in the deal. So like, there was more to this than just like the studio, the movies and stuff that we've been focusing on. This was a media merger. There was a lot to this. Hulu was involved. I mean, there was a lot of stuff involved in this. That why Disney, when they weren't doing this just to get the rights to the Fantastic Four, you know, I mean, there was a lot to this, a lot of moving parts and a lot of reasons why they wanted to do it. And it was to make them an even bigger multimedia company. And that's what they've done.
Yeah. So, man, I'm fascinated. I just want to see. Let's see what happens. Let's fast forward.
Well, you, let's fast forward a year from now. If you still haven't gotten your 4K transfers of the untouched original Star Wars trilogy, you're not going to be happy.
I might burn some like countries down, bro, if that doesn't happen. I know I won't be alone.
Huh. All right. Yep. Well, we'll have that. We have that. We have that recorded. So, just in case.
Oh, man. Anyways,
I mean, again, that's one of those things that I can't imagine isn't going to happen, but you never know.
I mean,
Look how many years it took for Batman 66 to ever be released on. I mean, it didn't even get to DVD. It took so long it went to Blu-ray, for its first release. So, I mean, who knows?
Wasn't there another studio that owned that?
Well, the problem there was that, so 20th Century Fox and Warner Brothers kind of were in a fight with that, because 20th Century Fox owned the rights to the show, but Warner Brothers owned the right to the character, and that's what kind of held that up all those years. And that finally they came to an agreement where they were going to co-market the Batman 66 brand, and then you got the comic book series and the figures and all kinds of merch around it, and eventually you got the remastered transfers on Blu-ray. So, but yeah, I mean, all those years, that's what was essentially holding that up. But the point is, sometimes when something makes, I mean, that those two studios getting together to release that show made sense 30 years ago. And it didn't make sense until a few years ago. So that's why I say something makes a lot of sense to us, but for some reason it takes a lot longer for the studios to realize that it makes sense. So, but hopefully, since it's one studio now in charge of all of that, they do the right thing.
Yeah, there shouldn't be any red tape. I'm going to have to ask some people about that. See if there's anyone that can give us a straight answer.
Yeah.
So, to be determined and to be continued.
Yes, definitely.
All right. Well,
anything else?
Done.
Yeah, I think so.
I think we hit everything. You know, next week we'll get into a spoilerific rundown of Shazam, and hopefully we'll have some listeners participate in that conversation. So, again, if you're interested, please DM us or just tweet at us at the Fanboy Garage, and we will gladly try to accommodate you and get you on the show. Other than that,
Go ahead. Yeah, so that's the thing, though. So, full disclosure, right? You say next week. So obviously Shazam does not come out until April 5th, which is technically not next week. But we will actually be recording the post-Shazam release episode of the show early, since we've already seen the movie, and since I will not be here the week after Shazam comes out. I will be out of the country. So we are actually going to be recording that episode early, and we'll have it ready for release since we've already seen the movie. There's no sense in, you know, holding it back. So that's why when you say next week we'll have people on to talk about it, we're going to be recording next week, but it's actually not next week's episode. If that makes sense. Yeah.
Exactly. All of that in a bag of chips.
Yeah. And we also should be doing a... we'll probably be having some people on to talk the professional wrestling. Since WrestleMania is a week from this coming Sunday. So we will we'll have some people on to talk about that too.
Yes. And I will be there at WrestleMania.
You will be.
So... I will be.
I will not be. So, I will be on a plane leaving the country.
Good for you. Yes.
But I will be.
Going to warmer climates.
I am. I will be at the Saturday night before WrestleMania. I will be at Madison Square Garden for the New Japan Ring of Honor G1 Supercard, which I didn't think I would be going to. But now that I'm going to be here, I will be going to again. So we will both be attending professional wrestling events on WrestleMania weekend, just different events. But so we'll have it all covered here on the Fanboy Garage.
Hells yeah. All right. Cool. And then just, you know, obviously we do have partnerships and friends at other podcasts. So, you know, stay tuned for additional special guests, which we'll be bringing on in the next coming weeks. Loads of topics, things like that, that we'll be discussing with our buddies. And of course, you know, if there's any other topics that you guys would like us to cover, please feel free, reach out to us directly. We're more than happy to engage in conversation and to include your topics or questions or anything like that on the show.
All right. So let's plug away here, huh? Of course, you could always go to thefanboygarage.com, check out the current episode and the episode archive, and buy some merch and send us an email and all that fun stuff. And you want to engage in that conversation with us, you can do it on Twitter at the Fanboy Garage.
Did you forget the handle?
No, I didn't. I just wasn't sure I was going to start with that. But and you can find me at Real CL Mighty.
And you can find me at Starting Sith on Twitter. Also, be sure to check out our Instagram page at the Fanboy Garage. Photos, commentary, whatever else we've got going on, it kind of translates to both. And that's kind of it. I mean, we have some other stuff brewing that we'll kind of save for a later date as we kind of get our ducks in a row and plan. But yeah. You know, for those of you guys who are listeners and you've had a chance to meet us in person at a watch party, thank you as always for listening to us. If you haven't had the chance to meet us, thank you so much for listening. We appreciate you guys all. And, you know, we just look forward to continue to build our community, build our fans, you know, give you guys an opportunity to continue to connect with us and influence the show. So, again, I've said probably thank you more times than I can count, but thank you.
Yes, definitely thank you. And thank you for putting up with my coughing this week. Hopefully that will be gone soon. But until then, I guess we'll talk to you later.
Later.